We're turning once again this evening to the fourth chapter of Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 4. We began a study of this last Wednesday evening. And we want to continue our consideration of this passage this evening. Remembering now that Nehemiah had been called by God to go back to the land of Judah. People of Israel had been in captivity for many years. Now the Persians were the world power. Under the decree of Cyrus, a good number of folks had returned back to the land under the leadership of Zerubbabel and Ezra. It was under the leadership of Zerubbabel that the temple of God in Jerusalem was brought once again to completion. But the walls of the city remained in disarray. And God raised up Nehemiah to go back to the land. He received permission from the king. He had the necessary funds. When he returned to the land, he was able to muster the necessary manpower to fulfill this great task that God had called for him to accomplish. In the initial stages, things were going well. But it was not long before the opposition faced them. Opposition from the outside, opposition from the inside. And as we considered basically the first six verses last Wednesday evening, we saw the first problem faced by Nehemiah and the solution to that problem. I think by way of review, we'll read together the first six verses, chapter 4. But it came about it heard that we builded the wall. He was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. And he spake before his brethren in the army of Samaria and said, What do these feeble Jews? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which are burned? Now Tobiah the Ammonite was by him, and he said, Even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down their stone wall. Hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head, and give them for a prey in the land of captivity, and cover not their iniquity. And let not their sin be blotted out from before thee, for they have provoked thee to anger before the builders. So we built the wall, and the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. The first problem faced by this band of workers was the mockery and intimidation of the enemy from the outside. They began to mock, You do not have the resources. You don't have the ability to do this great job. And even if you, by some stretch of the imagination, are able to construct some edifice, it's not going to last. Even the small fox, when it makes its way across that wall, is going to cause the wall to tumble. They began to mock. They intimidated the workers and Nehemiah. And the danger was there that the people might respond to that intimidation, that the work might cease as these who were the enemies of God, not just the enemies of Nehemiah and the workers, but the enemies of God, sought to have the work of God come to a standstill. Mockery, intimidation from those who are outside. The solution to that problem was one of prayer and activity. We saw there in verses 4 and 5 particularly that great imprecatory prayer of Nehemiah as he prayed the judgment of God to come upon Sanballat, to come upon Tobiah for their mockery, recognizing that mockery not to be directed primarily against them, but primarily against God. And then the faith in response to that prayer as they engage themselves in the building of the wall. because the people had a mind to work, and there were great lessons in application that we saw from those passages to our own situation here. But beginning in verse 7, we have the second problem faced by Nehemiah and his band of workers. The previous victory that they experienced was well and good. But the previous victory did not make them immune from further threats and dangers from the enemy. It's good for us to remember, and we've been instructed many times that we ought to remember, the past dealings of God in our behalf, the past victories that we've experienced at the hand of God. It does us good to remember those times in the past where we've seen the deliverance of God, and we've seen the hand of God made mighty and strong against our enemies in bringing deliverance for us as people. It's good to remember those victories. But let us not think for a moment that because we have experienced victory in the past, that the opposition is going to roll over and play dead. For the opposition is going to continually raise up its head against the people of God. Opposition once again came. And this time the opposition was even more severe than it was before. The first opposition was that simply of mockery, of intimidation. They were making fun of the people of God. But now, we have the threat of conflict. They survived the mockery. The work progressed, we're told in verse 6, until half the wall was built. They'd been diligent in their work. They'd seen a certain measure of success in their work, to the extent that half the job was now finished. They'd been in the labor. And the danger is always there that when you are engaged in the labor and you look back and see the work that has been accomplished, you've come a long way. Much has been accomplished. And the work begins to become simply now a matter of routine. Not always conscious anymore of the purpose of the task. Everything is going along smoothly. And if we're not careful, the guard is let down. And when that guard is let down, that's the moment the new attack comes. What happened here? The wall was half built. For a period of time, they were enjoying success, prosperity. No opposition. We've got them licked. But then all of a sudden, notice in verse 7. But it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth and conspired all of them together to come to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. The wall was not yet completed. Still half to go. And now, in the midst of the work, there is an allied attack that's raised against the people. Before, just mockery, just intimidation, just a bit of ridicule. But now there's the threat of real conflict. Notice the coalition that comes together to fight now against the people of God. There was Sanballat and Tobiah. But now along with those original mockers come the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites, folks that were not themselves all that friendly one with the other. They were not the best of friends. They were not normal allies. But they had a common hatred toward the people of God. And those then that were not natural allies found themselves uniting together against now this common enemy, this common threat that they found in Nehemiah and this band of men that were building the walls of Jerusalem. They put aside their own private differences. They put aside their conflicts between themselves. And the united in a full-scale plan of attack against this band of workers. Hatred that the world has against Christ. And because the hatred is against Christ, it naturally falls then also upon the people of Christ. Because of that hatred, oftentimes the world and the various factions of the world unite themselves, creating strange partners many times, but uniting themselves in common opposition against the people of God. A very real threat, a very real danger. And as Nehemiah and his band of men looked now and heard of this threat of conflict that was coming their way, Sanballat and Tobiah, the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites, from every viewpoint, the enemy was there. They appeared to be surrounded by the enemy. The opposition was at every hand. Very real. Source of danger. Source of concern. And they appeared to be alone. Say there are going to be times in the experience of this church. There are going to be times in the experience of every one of us as individuals as we fight the Christian battle that God has placed us in. That it's going to seem as though the entire world is allied against us. That we have no allies. That we have no friends that we can count on. Everywhere we look is going to be the enemy. And as we noted, I think, in passing last week, many times that enemy is going to come from the ranks of those we ought to be able to consider our friends and our allies. It's going to seem as though we're alone. Real danger. The world, the enemy, quite happy to see us done in. Quite happy to see the work of God that we are engaged in brought to absolute cessation. And working to that end. Indeed, as we look at the circumstance Christianity today. Indeed, the number of enemies are increasing on every hand. The opposition is growing on every hand. It can be a very discouraging, a very despairing situation. But what did they do? A very real problem. No longer were they just calling names. But now they were getting ready to throw the sticks and stones. That regardless of what the old adage is, hurts much worse than name calling. Could never quite figure that one out. Sticks and stones will break my bones. Is that how it goes? Now I can't remember the last part. But you know it, yes. What was the solution? We find the solution in verse 9. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto God and set a watch against them day and night because of it. This time, we do not have recorded the specific prayer of Nehemiah. We're simply told that he prayed and that he watched. And again, the solution to this problem now of warfare, this problem of conflict, was a combination between the work of God and man's response in view of God's work. There was the praying, and there was the watching. But first of all, there was prayer. For Nehemiah, prayer was never the last resort. Prayer was not that which Nehemiah relied upon after trying everything else. When word came to Nehemiah of this alliance that was formed against them, his first task was not to call together his counselors, his advisors, and decide upon the proper course of action. this prayer meeting that Nehemiah called here in verse 9 was not that which was planned. It was that which was spontaneous in view of the danger. The prayer was the first recourse of action. The prevalent attitude among believers today, when problems come our way and the opposition comes, we face the battle. Whatever the need might be. We try to work things out. We try to do it our way. We devise our plans. We put into exercise what we think would be the solution. And then when all else fails, we tend to pray. The prayer must be first. If we are going to know true success in the divine enterprise, prayer must have the priority. Prayer must be the settled habit of life. It was natural for Nehemiah to pray. We noted last time that some 8 times interspersed throughout this book of Nehemiah, we have references to his praying. This was what he was in the habit of doing. We need to learn that. We need to learn that the first course of action is prayer. We desire to pray. We seek to pray. We don't pray as we ought to pray. But God, I trust, has given us that desire that we do pray. Prayer, I say, must be the habit of life. Oh, threatenings may be always coming. They may be on every side. But prayer is the first response. And having prayed, they set a watch against them day and night. The Lord himself instructed his disciples that they were to watch and to pray. Vigilance, watchfulness, is part of faith. We pray with faith, believing that God hears our prayers, that God will answer our prayers. Watchfulness, this vigilance, is part of the exercise of faith. Prayer without watching tends to be slothful. Watching without prayer can be sinful. The one is presumptuous, and the other is foolish. We watch and we pray. The enemy is still there. The enemy was round about them. The prayer of Nehemiah did not all of a sudden send Sanballat and Tobiah and their allies scurrying off into the hills. They were still there. But they had the confidence that God had heard them. And they took their watch against them, prepared for the battle. Now notice later on in this chapter the practical effect that this prayer and watchfulness had upon Nehemiah and his people. Notice in verse 16. And it came to pass from that time forth that the half of my servants wrought in the work, and the other half of them held both the spears and the shields and the bows and the habergeons. It's a type of armor, coat of mail that they would wear. And the rulers were behind all the house of Judah. They which builded on the wall and they that bear burdens with those that laid it, every one with his hands wrought in the work, with one of his hands wrought in the work, and with the other hand held a weapon. For the builders, every one had his sword girded by his side, and so builded. And he that sounded the trumpet was by me. The enemy was there. The threat was on. The battle was imminent. They prayed, and they watched, And the work went on. But the work went on now in a way whereby they were prepared to stop the work for a moment to slay a few of the enemy. Half of them, we're told, held the weapons. The other half labored. And even those that did the laboring had the trowel in one hand and the sword in the other. Every one of them ready to take up arms, to join in the conflict if the need so arose. Here's that mighty union between the sword and the trowel. Everybody was involved. I think it's important that we as a congregation learn this lesson. Everybody was involved. It was not just Nehemiah, the leader, that prayed and took up the watchfulness. We sometimes fall in that trap that the work of God is that which must be accomplished by the minister of the gospel. After all, he's the one who has that special calling of God. He's the one who gets paid for it. It's his job. And so we set back being fed, we set back being protected, being led by that one, and do not join ourselves in the conflict, in the watchfulness, or in the prayer. But the lesson that we must learn from this passage, that this was not just the activity of Nehemiah. Everybody worked. You see that in verse 15, and it came to pass when our enemies heard that it was known unto us that God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall. Everyone unto his work. Verse 19, and I said unto the nobles, unto the rulers, unto the rest of the people, the work is great and large, and we are separated upon the wall, one far from the other. Each one had his own job to do. They were separated on that wall. There were distances between them. Consequently, the danger was there at every place in the wall where the enemy might sneak in. But every man was in his own position. Every man was joining in the work. There was unity. It's what Nehemiah was desiring and calling for here. That's why he gave the instruction, as far as the blowing of the trumpet was concerned, to be the rallying noise upon which they would come together to help one another in the time of conflict, at the place of specific battle. But they were all in their position. They were all doing their job. Every one of them joined in the work. Verse 17, every one of them was ready for the battle. For not only the half that had the spears and the swords and the bows and the armor, they were not just the ones who were going to be the fighters, but even those who held the tools had in one hand the weapons. Everyone was ready to join in the conflict. Everyone was ready for the battle. Verse 22, everybody watched. Likewise, at the same time, said I unto the people, let everyone with his servant lodge within Jerusalem, that in the night they may be on guard to us and labor on the day. They each had the responsibility for watchfulness, to be vigilant. Everyone had his job to do. The jobs were different. They all were not doing the same thing in this conflict that they were preparing for. They were all not doing the same job on the wall, but they did their jobs. Because the cause for which they were laboring, the cause that they were prepared to fight for, was the most important thing. Let the enemy come. The cause is going to be done. Let me do the labor. Now, it may be hard labor.
It may not be glamorous labor, but this is my position on the wall, and by God's grace, I'm going to do my job. There was a unity of spirit, a unity of cause. And if we as a congregation are going to know the solution to the problem of external attack and threat and conflict, we must learn this lesson. There is a unity that must be demonstrated and must be manifested in the fulfillment of the cause. Now, in fulfilling that cause, we all have different jobs. We're not all the preacher. We're not all the Sunday school teacher. We're not all elders. We're not all deacons. But we all have work to do. We all, every one of us, whether we are in positions of leadership or not in positions of leadership, whether we're in the forefront or in the background, every one of us must be in the work. Every one of us must be ready for the battle. And every one of us must be vigilant, watchful, and pray. Self-sacrifice, not concerned about position. Suppose it would be quite easy for those who were stuck with the task of laboring, of laying the bricks or mixing the mortar, who also had in the other hand the sword, to look at those behind them who simply were bearing the weapons, just standing there, on guard, holding a spear, holding a shield, looking around and saying, hey, let's trade jobs for a while. Let me just stand there. If I see the enemy come, we'll trade again. But for now, while there's peace anyway, you make some of these bricks. You mix some of this mortar. Let me just stand there for a while. Be the natural response of the flesh, I suppose. Somebody else's job may look more attractive. We may wish we were in that position. We may desire to be in the foreground instead of the background. It's not the attitude to have. That attitude of self-seeking is counterproductive to the unity that must be there if we are going to enjoy the success in the work of God. God has called us. God has placed us in our respective positions. We each have our own job to do. Maybe in man's estimation, it's not as glamorous as some other part, but it's the job we have to do. And we must be faithful in the exercise of our responsibility. We must be diligent. We must be vigilant in the performance of our duty. They were separated on the wall. If this particular man at this particular place in the wall let down his guard, if he put down his sword, if he stopped laying the bricks, became a very weak place in the wall. Became a place that was susceptible to the attack of the enemy. The enemy is most likely to attack the position of weakness. So we must all make sure we're strong. You say, oh, this is a strong church. We've got a strong minister. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe the attack, therefore, will not come against the minister. The attack may come on pew number 5 or pew number 10. How strong is pew 10? How strong are you? How well are you performing the responsibility that's God given you? to hold the sword, to hold the trowel, to keep the eyes open, to keep the prayers prayed. Must be unity of cause, unity of spirit, unity of work. For the battling and the building are necessary both in the work of God. And if we are to survive and be successful as a church, to be the kind of church God would have us to be, to endure the opposition, to stand firm in the conflict, everyone must be ready. At the sound of the trumpet, to rally together, to fight the enemy of God. But there, what confidence we can have. For notice that even though we hold the spear, we hold the swords, shoot the arrows, verse 20, our God shall fight for us. Again, it's His battle. The conflict is His. We fight in His strength. We fight in a battle that is already won. We sang tonight, faith is the victory. The victory is there. Faith is what appropriates that victory to ourselves. As we rely upon the fact that God hears our prayers, and we act and move in response to that faith. Conflicts will come. The war is there. The solution is to pray, to watch, and be ready to fight, not to give in. Those were the two problems that came from the outside. Very real problems. Very serious problems. Things that threaten to thwart the very cause of God in that place. But perhaps the greatest problem of all was the problem that came from the inside. Notice in verses 11 and 12. Here's the problem. Let's pick it up at verse 10. And Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we are not able to build the wall. And our adversaries said, they shall not know, neither see, till we come in the midst among them and slay them and cause the work to cease. And it came to pass that when the Jews which dwelt by them came, they said unto us 10 times, from all places whence ye shall return unto us, they shall be upon you. The problem from within. For there were those in the number that succumbed to the intimidation. You see the pessimists there in verses 11 and 12. They saw the surrounding enemy. But they saw that surrounding enemy as being too great a foe to fight. They saw that enemy as being too powerful. They saw that enemy as having too many military weapons for them to face. They looked at their meager weaponry, their meager arsenal. They had a sword and a trowel. What good could that do when the battle got hot? And they became intimidated. And they became fearful. We don't stand a chance when the conflict comes. And therefore, because we do not stand a chance when the conflict comes, it's best to avoid the conflict. Let's just try to get along. We can make some kind of compromise. But we ought to be able to work this out so there's peace between us and Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites. There ought to be some compromise. There ought to be some peaceful treaty. We're over our heads if we think we can go up against them.
10 times. Look at that. 10 times, they say. The threat comes and they keep telling us we don't stand a chance. Now, they must know that we don't stand a chance. They keep telling us we don't stand the chance. Maybe they're right. See, maybe they're right. And we begin to look at our arsenal, at our own strength. And there was Judah who saw their own inability, the weakness of their own military experience. And there was the power of the enemy. You know, I think they're right. I think that if we get into a battle with them, we're going to be done. We don't stand the chance. So we better back off a little bit. Suggested last week that intimidation is one of the most effective weapons that the enemy has. If the enemy can get us intimidated, if he can get us fearful, well, he's won the battle. Because we're not even going to take up the arms to fight. And that was about to render the people here ineffective. Through fear, they were stopping the work. There were those in the number that were quite satisfied to stay where they were. Hey, the wall's half done. Hey. At least they have to work a little bit to get over the wall. It's halfway up. Let's just leave it there. Leave it there. We're satisfied with the work half done. Not so bad. We've spent a lot of time here. We've done a lot of work here. It looks pretty good. Just put a few finishing touches on here and there. But it's high enough. Don't you think, Nehemiah? Leave it alone. We're satisfied. Well, I trust that God would preserve us, would preserve this church from any who would shy away from the battle, would shy away from the conflict because of intimidation for any reason. And certainly may we not be satisfied where we are. We've been building the wall here. Progress has been made here. But we're not finished. Well, we could stop here and look and say, you know, our wall is a lot bigger than somebody else's wall. We've made a lot more progress. You know, we've got a pretty good wall here. And we're starting to make friction out there. If we can just let the wall stay where it is, not go any higher. Let's just stay where we are. Enjoy the peace. Enjoy the prosperity. May we not be falling into that trap. There was discouragement on Judah's part there in verse 10. The labor was too great. It's beyond our ability to continue. We're just plain tired of this. We've been working and laboring, and the bearers of the burden, the strength is decayed. We're getting weak. We're tired. And everywhere you look, there's rubbish. There's rubbish all around. We're not able to build the wall. The rubbish is too great. Judah makes the complaint. I wouldn't be surprised if it was Sanballat that said that. I expect trouble from him. But here's Judah. And the complaining of Judah from within threatened the work. It'd be a lot easier to go back to Persia. Everything was easy there. We didn't have to work so hard there. We look back at where we were, or even where we are, and you know, it's good enough here, or it was better then. Had no conflicts. Too much rubbish. We look back at the history of this place. In recent days, we've had our troubles. We've had our conflicts. We've had them from within. Had some from outside. But I can remember a day in the history of this church before most of you ever heard of this church, when we had virtually no problems. Virtually no problems. We had prayer meetings. Dr. Gamery can testify to this. Maybe 4 or 5 on a Wednesday night. Maybe on a big Wednesday, 8. But we had peace, I tell you. We had peace. Oh, a little bit of problem here and there, what to spend money. Had money coming out of our ears. Peace. But I don't want to go back there. Most of you don't know what that place was like. I don't want that again. But it was peaceful. It was quiet. Maybe there's some that want to go back to that kind of day. Too much rubbish, too much conflict. We've been at this work long enough. It's just plain discouraging. There's discouragements. We're not growing as fast as we would like to grow. We're not seeing souls saved in the number we'd like to see them saved. We're not seeing the lost brought into this place that we'd like to see brought into this place. It can get discouraging. But what do? We get rid of the rubbish. Yes, there's rubbish. I don't know what that rubbish was, but you know, we can use our imaginations as to what kind of rubbish we have here. Our own plans, our own ideas that are not based, founded upon God's word, God's promise. Anything that's not contributing to the spiritual growth of this place. Can we call it rubbish? Call it trash? Need to get rid of that. Those hindrances, those obstacles that must be removed. Let's not look at the hindrances. Let's not look at the rubbishes and say, well, there's just too much stuff there.